Everyone, welcome back to the Wealth Preservation Podcast. We are super excited to have Gabrielle Boucher back with us today. Gabrielle, how's it going out there in Dallas?
It's awesome. I'm excited to jump back in with you guys.
Perfect. And Josh, where are you reporting out of today?
On the road in Cincinnati, Ohio. Gorgeous, beautiful Cincinnati, Ohio. My wife, being a California girl, had to figure out that in the Northeast, you have to wear jackets and sweatshirts, like layers. You can't just throw on a sweatshirt and be fine. So we made an emergency run to Costco yesterday to purchase a puffy jacket so my wife could be warm. But yes. We're in the Northeast in the wintertime, so it's chilly, but it's beautiful.
Having some time, you know, having grown up in Minnesota, yes, it is one of those things where you're like, wow, I have a jacket on, but I think I need like two or maybe three jackets. Wow, what is this?
The starter jacket.
Yes, there's the starter jacket. Awesome. Well, hey, so today we're going to be going into really Gabrielle's The Purpose Company, The Purpose Factor, her book. Do you want to hold up your book real quick for all those who are watching on YouTube?
And go really buy 20 copies.
Yes, go buy 20 copies. Mm-hmm. And really what she does with millennials and her consulting and really what her book is about. So real quick, do you want to give us maybe a 2-minute recap of how, you know, in our previous episode, we talked about how you became the millennial expert. Do you want to do maybe a 90-second recap of how you got that title?
Sure. Yeah. So I became really the millennial expert who is a millennial during a time where so many organizations, leaders, and companies were looking at the next generation and thinking, who are they and what's wrong with them? And my research really started really early on. I wrote my first book about millennials when I was 17. I've written 5 since, looking at who's the next generation? How do you engage with them? So I've studied everything from millennials in entrepreneurship, millennials in management, millennials in leadership. And so now we get to work with major brands, companies, and organizations around the world to help them better optimize their multi-generational team and better lead others, no matter their generation.
Perfect. And you know, so, you know, you're dealing with, you know, getting people to understand millennials a little bit better. Could you kind of give us maybe like the first, before we dive into your company and the book, can you give us maybe the one thing that, you know, if anyone's listening who's a hiring manager or anything like that, what are people missing about millennials in general?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing is mismanaged expectations. And expectations, I think, are the biggest challenge that we as humans have, is we assume that other people see the world the way that we do, have the same expectations, like the same things that we like. And especially in a corporate sense, we assume, well, of course they want to get paid what we got paid, or of course they want the same kind of benefit structure, or of course they want to have the same type of desk. And it's frankly just one of the biggest crimes, I think, it's happening inside of organizations, is that we project our own expectations on other generations. And it's not just older generations doing it to younger generations. Younger generations do it to older generations too, assuming older generations want to sit in maybe a bullpen type environment. Like, yeah, of course. Why do you want a wall? Walls are terrible. And maybe if you're an older generation, you're like, no, walls are great, actually. So it's one of the kind of key elements of respect is understanding that it's a two-way street, and understanding that just because someone is different doesn't mean that they're wrong. And so corporate leaders, whether a leader, manager, CEO, or even a parent, you have to understand the role of expectations. And so having unset expectations when you're hiring someone is a huge, huge challenge, because they're coming in expecting how quickly they're going to get a raise, a promotion, they're going to get access to clients, and they're coming in with silent expectations. And if you as a leader don't communicate those and understand what those are, you're going to lose your next generation talent. And so one of the key things that we teach when we develop onboarding programs for companies is the law of threes. So have your employees come in and say, here are my 3 expectations. And so it could be anything around salary and promotion, access to clients and customers. It could be the type of work that you're doing, whatever that looks like. And then you share your 3 expectations for them. And so now you have a working framework that you can go from to say, okay, maybe in the future, if they're letting me down or they're coming in late or they're not performing in an optimal way, I can now go back to their expectation sheet and say, what are we missing here? Mm-hmm. Versus just coming in and being disappointed that they're not doing what you wanted them to do. And I think sometimes it's so funny, because people will say, oh, well, it's just common sense. well, common sense is actually really relative. So common sense for one generation may be how to change your oil and balance a checkbook, whereas common sense for my generation is how to go on Netflix and, you know, download an app. And so common sense is really relative to what it is that you need at the time. And so we really miss out, I think, on really powerful partnerships that are cross-generational when we don't set expectations appropriately.
Yeah.
I think that's so powerful. And that's a really great point, because I think that's just really like leadership 101 also. I mean, maybe not even just for millennials, but across the board, when you're trying to lead a team or a group of people and letting, you know, setting that goal and knowing what we're trying to accomplish, I just think that's just basic leadership. And I think for the millennial generation, they even want that a little bit more, to know where they're going and to know why they're going that way.
And it's kind of an interesting time to, you know, because before millennials were just like the, oh man, we're hiring a bunch of millennials right now, right? But now we're seeing a shift towards like, no, the millennials have been in the workforce for a while. The millennials are actually taking over a lot of the leadership positions. So we can't really just like shrug our shoulders and be like, eh, it's millennials. What are you going to do, right? Like, we, now it's time to work together.
Yeah. And a lot of millennials either don't call themselves millennials because they don't know that they're millennials, or they're not dumb. They read the press. It's not exactly popular to raise your hand and say, I, a millennial, will take on this leadership position. No one's putting that in their LinkedIn profile. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm a millennial. It's more of an apology more than anything else. Yeah. And so kind of a passion that I have is really redeeming a generational identity, because I think that as a generation, we're oftentimes chided for the very things that we should be celebrated for. And so We're a generation that's extremely collaborative, extremely creative, extremely excited about taking on leadership positions and testing things out. We really have a lab mentality, which is really incredible. But we're oftentimes criticized for those very things that actually really set us apart. And so great leaders recognize the uniqueness of the individual and the uniqueness certainly of a generation, and learn how to work around that. How do you benefit from the strengths and protect against the weaknesses, rather than expect a generation to fall in line and start to act like everybody else?
Yeah. Which I'm sure you've, because obviously you're the millennial expert, right? So you know all about this, but you know, this is the first generation where they've really split in two and said, hey, there's a big difference between like the first half of the millennials and the last half of the millennials, just because of the way the tech curve kind of spiked there, and the innovation curve kind of spiked. And so I think that's also something where there's almost like I know older millennials who are just like, oh, I'm not really a millennial, because that, you know, this is what a millennial is. And I'm like, well, no, there's just, you know, a generation is just a chunk of time, right? Like, it's, you don't get to like declare that you're a boomer just because you act like a boomer.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, so there's millennial group A and there's millennial group B. And so you guys both took sips of your drink at the same exact time. It was a little creepy. I just wanted to point that out. So I don't know if you guys coordinate this or not, but it was adorable.
It's on my script. I'm like, and take a sip of coffee. There we go.
This is very cute. So there are these two parts of our generation, millennial group A and millennial group B, and understanding where you fall is actually really important, and understanding that as if you're a leader and recruiting the next generation, not to treat us all the same, because you could be hiring someone who's 37. And you're like, oh, you're a millennial. Okay. I know how to work with you. Like, flip through, like, okay, great, TikTok. You're like, no, like you missed it. Right. Or assuming that a lot of times people assume millennials like a phase of your life. People are like, oh, when I was a millennial. I'm like, I don't think you understand the meaning of that word, actually. And it's true. I mean, there's a phase of life that a lot of people have. You know, when you're younger, you tend to move around jobs more. You may not be married or quote unquote settled down. That's certainly the case. But on average, millennials are taking 7 years longer to get married, buy a house, and start investing. And so if you're in any industry that is trying to employ or get millennials to purchase from you, you need to understand that this is a really unique generation, that you can't take the same old approach. And as millennials are approaching 40, we have a very different perspective on parenting, purchasing homes, and just kind of operating our lives, that you can't assume that they're going to fall in line and start acting like older generations. The data just really, it doesn't support it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as everybody can tell, Gabrielle is super passionate about the millennial stuff. And if you want all of that information, go watch the first episode, because it was all in there. But we want to dive into Gabrielle's The Purpose Company and her book. Because that's what we're really, we should probably do a whole nother like 3 episodes on the millennials and, you know, pull all the information out of Gabrielle's brain. There's a lot of it in there, which is awesome. But we want to talk about your book, the Purpose Factor, and then we'll go into your company. So tell us about the book.
Sure. So I wrote the book, The Purpose Factor. Here we go. With my husband, Brian. Yeah, check it out. PurposeFactorBook.com. PurposeFactorBook.com. So Brian and I, Brian is my husband, which I always have to clarify because sometimes people on LinkedIn, when we do videos together, they're like, you and your brother are hilarious. I'm like, ooh, that's creepy.
Don't like, look at my social media or you're going to be really creeped out.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, too many questions. So, it's actually really, really interesting. So Brian and I kind of came together and we started running the Millennial Solution together a couple years ago. And he was always really passionate about purpose and helping people find their purpose. And it was something that we loved to do. We'd have people over to our house and we'd kind of help them get clarity about what they're supposed to do next. And there was this one instance where we were training one of our Fortune 100 clients, and it was 2 days of training. It was a really, really long day. And I just remember saying, hey, Brian, I was doing all the training and he was kind of sitting in the back working. And I said, hey, like, I need a snack. Like, I'm not one of those people who's like, did I eat today? No, I know exactly what I ate and it was 2 hours ago and I need more. So mama needed a snack. So I was like, hey, I'm going to go get something to eat. Can you just cover me for like 30 minutes? And he said, sure. So I left, got my snack, came back, and everyone in this room is crying. I'm like, what did you do? You broke my clients. Like, what happened?
Drill Sergeant Brian.
Yeah. And he was talking about purpose. And it was this really profound moment because, to be perfectly honest, I didn't think that purpose was relevant inside of corporations. I'm a data girl. I'm looking at, okay, what's the ROI? I don't want anyone to hire me. I'll actually tell people, don't hire me if I can't save you money. I'm all about how can I make sure that there's something that's actually going to lead to you making money or saving money or both. And so Brian comes in and he's talking to people about their purpose and people are crying. It was this really profound moment where one of the guys there was, we were helping him identify kind of why he got into HR. And we share the story in our book, Keep Them Longer, where he was coming home from class when he was in college. He opened up the door to his dorm room and his roommate was in there with a gun pushed to the back of his throat, about to commit suicide. And so he runs over, you know, gets the gun out of his friend's mouth, helps his friend kind of get back on his feet, helps his friend find a job. And at the time, he was just this like low guy on the totem pole. He was a bagger at this grocery chain that he's now a top guy at. And he said in that moment, he said, I never realized that that's why I wanted to get into HR was because I knew that work mattered. And if I could help people find meaning in life by the work that they do, I knew I could make a difference. So we're all ugly crying at this point. I mean, it was just a mess. But that, I think, was that moment that really hit me. Like, we need to start talking about purpose at work. And it isn't just a millennial thing. Certainly, I think there's an expectation for the next generation coming in who doesn't just want to make a living. They want to make a difference. But whether you're 22 or 82, you want to know, number one, that you matter. And number two, that the work that you do matters. And so that's really where the journey of the Purpose Factor came in. So we started to incorporate purpose into working with the military and working with our Fortune 500 clients and working with the government. And as we started to study the impact of finding purpose, we actually started to find the ROI. And so we have case study after case study of gym franchises that actually had their revenue go up by 59% and multi-level marketing teams that had measured it and their revenue had gone up by 49%. And so we started to recognize that, you know what, there is actually an ROI of purpose. And so that's really where we started writing the Purpose Factor for leaders, for individuals, for really anyone in transition who's looking to really understand who they are and how what they do matters.
Yeah. So can we take a second and unpack those 2 points that you talked about, Gabrielle, you know, who they are and what they do matters. Kind of how'd you come up with those? But obviously those are kind of good terms, but what do those mean and for your book and what you're doing?
Yeah. Everyone wants to know that they're significant. I've never met anybody who's like, you know what, I would love, my ideal job is to get stuck in traffic, get yelled at my boss, know that what I do really is insignificant. At the end of a hard work day, have someone dump over all of my work and then completely delete it like it didn't matter. that's actually someone's worst day. Really. I mean, if you ask most people why they feel like they hate their job, it's because they're not recognized. So there's something inside of all of us that we want to be seen and appreciated, and not just seen and appreciated for being who we are, but doing something that matters as well. So significance really kind of boils down to those two things, is understanding that you matter, and then understanding that something that you do matters, that there's an impact of your input. And that's kind of that where that journey really started, of us really studying, because this book took about 7 years for us to study, about 15,000 hours of us to test. And we were really pretty hesitant actually to put it out, because we had a manuscript, our agent was pitching it. It was rejected by about 63 different publishers. And I was on a podcast not long ago, and the guy was like, "Oh my gosh, that's amazing that you overcame all those objections and you just kept going." I was like, "No, I didn't. I stopped." This isn't like the rags to riches, you know, Gabrielle and Brian overcame all odds. We were like, no, the market is telling us that either the book isn't ready or we're not ready. And so we took that as input to say, we need to keep working on this. And so that it took, you know, another 3 years from there for us to get to the point where then a couple publishers actually out of the blue came to us and said, you know, we think that this message is really relevant. Little did we know it was going to be released during a pandemic, where I think a lot of people are now asking, does what I do matter? And really, I think right-sizing a lot of the priorities that people have inside of their businesses. And so the conversation has now really been fascinating for companies to recognize that purpose does matter, and that your employees don't want to just know that you have a purpose as a company, but that they can fulfill their purpose at your company.
Yeah.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, in corporate America, and I've been in the military for a long time and done stuff, but the most frustrating thing when you're given a project to do, and you like dive into a project and get all the data and you put together the binder or whatever the big project is, right? And you take it into the higher ups or your boss or whoever, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we don't need this anymore," and they throw it away. That is like the biggest deflator of work, right? You're just like, "Oh, why? Okay, forget
absolutely.
It.
Like, could you just look at it and like smile at least? Like, oh yeah. Yay, and wait till I leave the room."
But that makes
just lie to me and say it looks good, okay?
Right, yeah, and that basically makes you feel like the next project you're going to be like, I'm going to only do it half as good because it's a waste of time, right? And it kind of, if that happens multiple times, finally you're just like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And they give you a project and they're like, hey, why can't I engage this employee anymore? It's just because you basically crushed his spirit like six times in a row and he doesn't have any more to give, right? So I think that's really interesting how you kind of brought that together on a point of leadership of, hey, you know, if you give somebody a job to do, like it should be relevant and it should have purpose, right? And it should, you know, when they go and kick butt at it, you should recognize that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that there are consequences, both good and bad. Sure. And I think sometimes as leaders, we don't want to do that. And I see that all the time with people training the next generation for leadership, is they say, oh yeah, we do a lot of stuff for millennials. They're like, they sit over there, like at the kids table, and they separate people based off of their age, which is really, really dangerous, because you need to be able to learn from other people as well, versus just saying, oh, you're the young people, therefore, you know, can you set us up on social media? Or, you know, can you make sure that, you know, everything's working with my email? Like, we go beyond just being, you know, your internal tech support. We can do a whole lot more than that. And giving people an opportunity to lead and giving them consequences, both good and bad. We call it sandboxing. So even on our own team, we'll give someone something and let them fail at it and say, hey, here are the consequences if you fail, and here are the consequences if you succeed. And giving people an opportunity to prove themselves right, I think is really, really powerful, because I think a lot of young people today don't take on leadership positions because of what you just said right there, Josh, is that they see other folks take on leadership positions, try really hard, go over the top, and then it's not appreciated. And we're all creatures of self-preservation. So why would you continue to expose yourself to rejection and not being appreciated when you could just get paid the same and work less hard? So it's really not hard to realize why employees are so disengaged. It's pretty simple to recognize that a lot of it comes down to significance and appreciation at work.
Yeah. And so, yeah. I mean, you've transitioned this from, you know, which I mean, like 7 years, you know, all that research. Where do you even, like, I guess first, where do you begin to start researching something like that? Like, what was the first thing you guys did to be like, hey, if we want to make sure this is like legit and prove ourselves. Like, here's the amount of research, or here's what we got to look at to make sure people read this and say, yep, this is true. This is not, you know, this is not a fluff piece.
Oh, I know. It was, to be honest, it was really hard. And being totally transparent, I had to deal with a lot of imposter syndrome of feeling like, what do we have to offer? I mean, we're pretty young, and we like, there's already been a lot of people who are talking about purpose. You know, what is it that we really have to offer? And we kept coming back to this moment of conviction, realizing that we do have something to say, and that the people who we have helped have given us the feedback saying, if it wasn't for this system, this process, I wouldn't have the kind of clarity that I have now. For example, we did a leadership retreat years ago when we were first developing this process. And one of the women who came, her name's Grace, she came and she was working for a nonprofit in DC. She had some ideas of what she wanted to do, but she really had no idea of how to get there. And so we helped her through this process of really understanding her purpose. And a core element of your purpose is your origin story, which is the hardest thing that you've ever had to overcome. And so we helped her identify her origin story. And for her, it was she'd been kicked out of the house. She had kind of to take care of herself and her siblings. And so she had this mindset of, I never want anybody to ever feel rejected the way that I was rejected. And so she found herself in international relations and event planning and event coordinating. And she was like, I know I'm made for something more. And so she went through this process. We had this powerful moment where she recognized that her purpose was her permission. She didn't have to wait any longer for some purpose fairy to come around and say, you are allowed to go forth and do these things. She recognized that that dream she had inside of her was unique enough and the permission that she was looking for. She left her job. She ends up getting a job with the United Nations, specifically the World Food Program, moves to Rome, meets the love of her life, gets married, is doing amazing work. Just 2 months ago, her and her team were actually awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for what it is that they're doing. And we reached out to her and we were kind of just catching up. And she said, thank you so much, because you and what you guys were able to do really unlocked something inside of me I didn't know was there all along. And so this journey, I think, of developing the purpose factor and ultimately the purpose company, which is our company that helps individuals and leaders discover and use their purpose, was something that it was a conviction that if we didn't do it, there were people who were going to go unserved. And I think that's really the best way to start a company. I have people ask me all the time, like, okay, great, I have a great idea. Where should I get started? And I was like, you never start with the what, you always start with the who. Who is it that you're helping? And even purpose, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, purpose is about your why. It's not. There's actually brain science that shows when you ask someone why, it triggers them and they get into a reactive mode and they're actually not going to give you an honest answer because it triggers their croc brain where they start to get defensive. So if you say, what's your why, you're actually starting to trigger them versus who is your who? Because everything, every industry, every idea, every economy is all focused on people. And so that's what we do, is we focus on who are you? And then your second who is it that you're supposed to help? Because that's really where fulfillment comes from, is using what you have inside of you to help other people.
Yeah.
So let's bring this back to a leader. We want to get into the individuals, but as a leader, how do leaders help their, not only themselves, we'll talk about that, but their team find their purpose and their, you know, not their why, but their who and what they're doing either in a project or inside a company?
Sure. It's pretty simple. And we kind of outline it in the book where we help people understand the four elements of your purpose, which is your natural advantage, which that's the role that you tend to play. So are you the teacher? Are you the kind of coordinator? Are you the one who's building things? So we have assessments actually throughout the book to help you identify the roles that you tend to play, which is so helpful for you as a leader to understand. So for example, if you lead a sales team and they're all doing the same job, but they all have different natural advantages, you can recognize that one of them who's a recruiter, so it's kind of a natural salesperson, they're going to sell very differently than someone who's a teacher, who's going to be teaching the customer or client, coming alongside them, making sure that they understand. So understanding the role that your people play is really important. The second element of your purpose is your pull passion. So that pull passion is the problem in the world that you want to solve. So some people like solving really big problems. Some people like solving really small problems. understanding that who it is on your team, the types of problems they like to solve. So if they're drawn to really big global problems and you have them working on something small and specific, they're going to get frustrated and they're going to feel like I can do a whole lot more. And the opposite is true. If you've got someone who really likes small specific problems and getting their hands kind of dirty on something right here, and you have them working on a really big complicated problem, they're probably going to feel overwhelmed and feel like they can't really make a big difference. The third element of your purpose factor is acquired skills. So the abilities that you've developed through education or experience. So what are you uniquely good at? What have you developed? What can you build expertise around? Because everything in the market is about expertise. A lot of times people are like, I don't really want to call myself an expert. I don't call myself a millennial expert for me. It really doesn't matter. I call myself an expert so that people trust the data and the strategies that we've developed over the last decade. So it's like if you're going into a doctor and you're like, oh, hey, doc, like, I, you know, or do you feel like you're the expert here? And he's like, no, I'm pretty proficient. I'm pretty good.
I'm going to that guy.
I call myself an expert. Yeah. Yeah. He's on Groupon or something. And of course not, because you're like, I need an expert who's going to feel, be confident that he can do what it is that I need to do. So expertise is really the name of the game of developing a platform for you to be able to use your purpose. And the fourth element of your purpose factor is what we call your origin story, which is the kind of moment that most shaped your perspective. And as leaders, a lot of times we don't want to get into that part of it. We don't want to hear the story like I just told you about Pete, who found his roommate about to commit suicide. We're like, you know, HR, you know, I don't want to get sued, any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we teach really appropriate ways to be able to discover people's origin stories and use them at work, because when you start to unlock that, when you start to tie the hardest thing anybody's ever overcome with what they get to do every day, you don't have engagement issues. You don't have retention issues. You don't have communication issues, because we start to see other people on our team for who they are and what they've overcome. And it gives them context to what it is that they get to do every day. And that, I think, is really powerful.
Yeah. And yeah. Okay. So, go ahead, Josh.
No, I was going to say, I it's really neat. I'm going to quote a book, and please don't be offended by it, but it's called Getting Naked by Patrick Lencioni. When he talks about that, the exact same part about, you know, you got to be open and honest and basically get, you know, basically emotionally naked, and especially in a team setting, you know, because that's when people really start to trust you, when you're like, hey, here's who I am and here's what it's about. And that's here, you get me. This is what you get when you get me. And that builds that, for lack of a better term, intimacy to build a better relationship and then to move forward and get more stuff done. Because people now trust you, right? Because they're like, hey, this guy's not hiding anything, or he doesn't have ulterior motives, or this person's not doing X, Y, Z. You're just basically who you are, and they can help you understand that.
Yeah. And that's such a generational thing too, because millennials have an expectation that their leaders are going to say, I don't know. But older generations were raised with a mindset of, you know, don't let them see you cry, pretend like you have it all together, never ask for help, never say you don't know.
Fake it until you make it, baby.
Yeah, that's right. But millennials actually see that as weakness, mm-hmm. whereas older generations see that as a strength. And so it's really fascinating kind of just seeing this overall shift beyond just generations. I think just as a society where we now value vulnerability. And so being able to do that in a way that is productive at work and not distracting at work is not just an art, but a skill and a science. And so understanding how to do that and having a system for it is something that we're really passionate about helping our clients with.
Yeah. And there was a ton in there that we could probably unpack. One term that I'm definitely using in the future is the purpose fairy. Whenever someone's like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, like, what are you waiting for? The purpose fairy? My kids are going to get sick of that one. But let's
you give us those four factors again real quick, just so we can.
Sure. Yep. So natural advantage, pull passion, acquired skills, and origin story.
Perfect. Awesome. Jinx.
Ready? On three, Mark. Ready? One,
two. One, two. Yeah. And okay, just so you know, like, we have not, he's been on the road for a long time. It's not even like we've been hanging out a bunch. I mean, this is just, I don't know. So I want to dive a little bit into what people can expect from the Purpose Company, right? So you guys do this as, you know, it's not just a book. I mean, you guys, and I've gone through your first video, just, you know, it's fun. what do you guys do as the Purpose Company, and what can people expect if they go there today, watch the video, and want to sign up or just explore you guys a little bit more?
Yeah. So what we really do at the Purpose Company is really help folks who feel like they're stuck, like they know that they have something greater mm-hmm. inside of them, and they know that that they're not living up to 100% of their full potential right now. We really help them get extreme clarity about who they are and who they're supposed to help, and then come up with a plan and a strategy of actually how to execute on that. So it's been really interesting. So we launched the Purpose Company really because we recognized that it couldn't just be a book helping teams or individuals discover purpose. Books are transformational, books are powerful, but systems is really what causes something to stick. And so that's really what the Purpose Company is. So our primary product is called Purpose Mastery, that actually helps people through the process of purpose discovery and purpose application. So that way you can really find fulfillment in what it is that you're doing. So some folks go through the program and they determine, you know what, I want to start a business, write a book, become a professional speaker, you know, do something that's coaching or others oriented. And that's amazing. So we help them first and foremost determine whether or not their goals are aligned with their purpose. Because sometimes we actually steal goals from other people because they sound good. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, I should definitely start a blog, or yeah, I should definitely start a podcast, or I should definitely do YouTube. And then you start to ask folks why. And they're like, well, you know, my cousin did it and he's doing really well. Like, okay, well, but what about you? How does that align with who you are, what you have to offer, and ultimately what your purpose is? So we help people really determine first and foremost, are their goals aligned with their purpose, or are they just things that they've borrowed from other people? And then what we also do is, for a lot of folks, is they're on the right track. They just want to find more fulfillment in what they're doing. And so really help them get clarity about the impact that they're making right now. And so one of the guys that we helped was really interesting. He was an eye doctor, and he came in because he's like, oh my gosh, I am really, you know, purpose driven. I know my purpose. I just am not living it out right now. We helped him through the process of purpose discovery. And by the end, he actually recognized, because we teach that purpose is vocation agnostic. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to change your job to have a more purposeful direction. A lot of people think, well, when I retire, that's really when I'll get into my purpose. Or if I work for a nonprofit, or if I volunteer more, or maybe on the weekends, I'm more in my purpose. But that's really not the case. That doesn't make sense whatsoever, that you're only using your purpose when you're a good dad or when you're volunteering. You can use your purpose whether you're helping a client, a customer, or serving someone coffee. So that's really what we help people do. But this doctor was interesting. At the end, he had started with a mindset of, I feel like my purpose is for when I retire. I'm going to be miserable until I retire. By the end, he recognized every single person who comes into his office is the person he can help with his purpose. And so it really shifts, I think, a perspective for people to find fulfillment in what they're currently doing as well.
Yeah. And that, I mean, so one thing that I just think is like super awesome about, you know, the Purpose Company and what you do is there's a bajillion books out there about, you know, be your best self, the 97,000 habits of highly successful people, the, you know your why. But I mean, it is, hey, systems to get you from A to B is, you know, you can read a book, but you need, you know, you need more help than that. Right. You know, and we all need to admit we need help too. Real quick, to give people a teaser, you know, because I really loved the analogy that you guys had of the princess versus the dragon slayer and how a lot of people are viewing themselves as a princess. Can you go into that a little bit just so people have like a, you know, I want to spark that interest for people to go watch that video. Because again, that one's free. And I think a lot of people need to check that stuff out.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And so the video you're referencing is a free training that we did for folks who feel like they're stuck and are just losing kind of that spark. And maybe for the first time ever, they've not had a plan. Because mm-hmm. most of the people that we help are really high achiever, high potential types. So we've got like NFL kickers and Yahoo Sports reporters and partner level attorneys. Like these are people who have always had a plan, and they woke up one day and they either don't recognize themselves or they're like, all of a sudden, I don't know where I'm heading, and it's terrifying. So, but yeah, that analogy I absolutely love, where I think a lot of people have, you know, waiting, like I said, for that purpose fairy, for someone to come around and say, hey, you know exactly what it is that you're supposed to do. And I was that way. I felt I was going to be discovered one day. If I try a bunch of stuff, then someone's going to say, Gabrielle, you should absolutely, you know, have your own show. Or Gabrielle, I saw a blog you did. You should definitely write this book. And I think we oftentimes, in almost a romanticized American fashion, think that the breakthrough is going to happen by someone recognizing us. And it's interesting because I think on one side we think, oh, well, that means that I'm not being pushy. I don't want to be the pushy one. I don't want to be the one who's self-promoting. But the truth is, it's actually completely grounded in ego. We're actually more of more obsessed with protecting our ego than we are with actually helping people. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us are sitting in these high towers waiting for someone to come in and tell us what to do with our lives, when in reality, they're not supposed to. It's not our partner's job. It's not our boss's job. It's not our parents' job to tell you what to do with your life. It's your life. And so that, I think that mindset shift is one that was really foundational for me, is when I realized I had a choice. That was my big breakout moment, was I had a choice. And it was this kind of mantra that kept coming up over and over again for me in my life, that it was like, I have a choice of who I'm going to be with. I have a choice of the job that I want to have. I have a choice of where I want to live. Because a lot of times we kind of find ourselves in these situations where I think days turn into decades because we feel like life is happening to us rather than recognizing that life can happen because of us. And so the choice of how we spend our time, of what we put in our bodies, of who we help, of what we do, is something that, especially during this season where the norm has been upset, is the perfect season to, I think, right-size your priorities and really recognize, you know what? I do have a choice. And if this isn't the life that I've always dreamed of, I can do something with it, and I can do something because of it. And having a system to be able to follow that through, rather than just quitting your job tomorrow and say, I'm moving to Tahiti, that's it, this was my dream. That's not the answer either. Because quitting what you're doing to do something selfish is going to result in the same amount of unfulfillment and dissatisfaction you have now. But choosing something that uses your purpose to help other people, that's the way that you find fulfillment.
Oh, so Gabby, I know you have a system and a plan. And how does that differ from like what you're doing for basically like maybe a company leader, like a CEO or something like that, and what you're doing for an individual? And how do you help a CEO like basically inspire his team to find their purpose, versus is it still the same process for the CEO finding his own purpose versus helping his team find theirs?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. So the application of purpose is really three steps for us. It's people, problem, and solution. So like I said, you always start with the who. The first who is you, the second who is other people. So helping your people understand their who, especially at work. Who is it that we're helping? Some people's who is the customer, the client, they're outward facing. Some people's who is supporting folks internally. Some people's who is their other teammates or their boss. So recognizing who your who is really important, because you'll do amazing things for other people. Oftentimes you'll do amazing things for other people you wouldn't even do for yourself. So the people first is really, really important. Then recognizing what problem do those people have that you can uniquely solve. Because as humans, we're all problem solvers. We're all wanting to solve a problem for other people. That's where you find satisfaction, is before there was this mess, and then afterwards there was this solution. And that's really a kind of very basic rudimentary equation for fulfillment, which is just using what you have inside of you to help other people. So what problem do they have that you're equipped to solve? Some people pick problems that they have no connection to, no skills, no actual ability to execute on. That's not where you start. You start with what you can do and what you can help them with. And then finally, it's that solution. What solution can you actually deliver that they're either going to value in terms of time, relational capital, or actual capital of, say, paying you for your service or your abilities? And so when we work with teams, it's really that same process that we use for you as an individual to determine your people, problem, solution with your purpose. But the same as with a team, is to help them understand who is it that we're helping, what problem do they have that we're solving, and what's the solution that we're uniquely equipped to provide.
Yeah. Because another thing, that I pulled from the free video, I love free stuff. So, if you guys ever give away free t-shirts, I'm there, right?
Great. Good to know.
But you know, expectations, you've gone into that and just, you know, you mentioned, hey, sometimes weeks turn into decades, right? And in your video, you talk about the 7-to-1 principle. Do you want to give our listeners a quick snapshot of what that 7-to-1 principle is and just kind of what you can expect when you're, you know, finding your purpose and reshaping your life is not a, you know, in an instant gratification society, we've got to pump the brakes, right? We got to set some expectations as to when can this get accomplished?
Yeah. Yeah, the 7-to-1 principle is one that we had come up with really kind of out of our own personal reflection. So Brian, my husband, came back from a funeral of his grandmother, and he came back, and as one kind of typically does when someone close to you passes away, he had kind of this moment of, oh my goodness, life is so short and it goes by so quickly. We're having breakfast one day and he said, you know, I wonder how long it takes to live just 1% of your life. Because we're just total data nerds. So we're always looking at kind of things in Excel spreadsheets. And I said, I don't know. He's like, well, no, really. Like, do you think it's like a couple months? Do you think it's a couple years to live 1% of your life? And I was like, I have no idea. So we started to do some research and really we're focused on your productive life. So say your productive life starts at age 20, and that's kind of when you're conscious, making choices. You're kind of usually out on your own, hopefully, unless you're a millennial. And the average person only lives to be 78. So how long it takes to live just 1% of your productive life is actually just 7 months. And when we looked at the calculation, we kind of looked at each other like, holy cow, 7 months. I mean, most people, 7 months goes by in a flash. I mean, 7 months of quarantine. I think we're a couple months past that now, but so many people have been waiting for things to return to normal. And seven months, like 2 years,
by the way. It feels like 2 years.
I think it probably does for a lot of people. And I think that how quickly you can live just 1% of your productive life waiting for something to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think when you start to put a time frame on the transformation that you could have in 7 months, you could, you know, if you're single, you could meet the love of your life. You could, you know, have incredible money saved. You could start a new business. You could lose 50 pounds. I mean, in 7 months, your life could be totally different. And yet for most people in 7 months, their life will be exactly the same.
Yeah.
So I think starting
for Mark, you can't lose 50 pounds in 7 months. Not Mark.
I could amputate both my legs. Boom.
I didn't say how. I didn't say how.
If you have a plan to get, you know, 50 pounds in 7 months, you should write that book. That's going to sell like hotcakes. Uh-huh. No pun intended.
Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Go ahead. Sorry, Gabrielle.
Oh, no, I was just going to wrap up. So, but I think that really was very sobering for us. And it's been interesting for some folks. If you're young, I think the word potential means something different based off of where you're at in your life. When you're young and someone says you have potential, it's encouraging because you're like, there's so much opportunity for me. If you're older and someone says that you had potential, it's something that's incredibly depressing because you feel like you lost an opportunity or squandered what you've been given. And I think that potential is everywhere. I think oxygen equals purpose. If you still have oxygen in your lungs, there's a reason that you're around. Mm-hmm. And it's not just to, you know, retire and, you know, watch television. I think that what you have, what you've learned, what you've overcome can help other people. And so no matter where you're at, what you're doing, you have the opportunity and a platform to be able to help people with your purpose. Just most people don't have the time or frankly, the system to discover their purpose and actually start using it to help people.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So real quick, just if you kind of switch it up a little bit, how much fun do you and Brian have doing this? I mean, it must be fun going around and helping people really find their purpose and seeing that like light bulb go on and seeing them like really actually change their life. That must inspire you on lots of you guys, both of you on lots of levels.
Yeah, it's pretty addicting, to be honest. It's pretty awesome. And being able to do it with your spouse, I think, is a whole other element. And a lot of people come up to us and say, oh my gosh, I would love to do this with my spouse. And I'm like, I don't think you mean that. I think that it sounds really good, But it's just like a new layer. I mean, even last night we were going over to our cousin's house for dinner. And so we're pretty good about communicating back to expectations. We got in the car and Brian's like, okay, babe, like, do you want to talk about work? We've got a 30-minute drive. Do you want to wrap up for the day? Or do you want to talk about something else? I said, let's talk about something else. I don't feel like I need to talk about work right now. 5 minutes later, we're talking about students in our course and the transformation that they had. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And she's launching this nonprofit. And like, oh my gosh, so-and-so made 50K last month. And then like 10 minutes later, we're like, was that work? I don't know if that counts as work or not. We're like, no. If we're talking about other people and what they're doing, it doesn't count as work. So it's that part I think is a little kind of funny, but absolutely. I mean, I've known from a really young age that I wanted to help people find identity and do something with it. And having a system to be able to do that, I think that's kind of the power of partnership, is finding someone, whether it's your life partner that you're married to or a business partner who kind of completes the other half of you, but being able to recognize someone else and their brilliance and recognize that they have a unique perspective and they kind of complete the other half or other third or whatever of what you need. That part's really, really fun too.
Yeah. So real quick, hold up the book again and let everyone know, like, where can people go to find this book and where can they go to find the Purpose Company?
Yeah. I'm so glad I did my nails, guys. Like, look how good they look right now.
I was worried. So I was like, I did not put that in the email. Make sure you do your nails.
Oh my gosh. I know. That's like when you tell your girlfriends, do your nails. You're like, oh yeah, I'm definitely getting engaged. So they can go to purposefactorbook.com. It's available on Barnes & Noble. It's available on Amazon. We're pretty Googleable as well. So checking out the book is cool. It's now on Audible, which is awesome. So quick, funny story about that. So all of the recording studios were closed because hashtag COVID. And so Brian was going to do the audiobook. He has a beautiful voice. He's got this broadcaster's voice that he was trained for. I've done one audiobook and I haven't listened to it. I haven't even listened to my own TED Talk. So I hate like my voicemail. So I already knew that I was not going to be the one doing the audiobook. And Brian, I think, absolutely loves the sound of his own voice. Not saying he's obsessed with it. I think he just appreciates the art. So he recorded it and there was no recording studio. And so we ended up recording it from our master bedroom closet. So I'll have to send you guys a photo of it. He looks like the Unabomber in there. Like he took like all of these blankets and like tried to make it as quiet as possible. And it turned out incredible, but it is pretty darn funny when you realize when you're listening to it, you're probably not thinking, wow, like he's surrounded by like dress shirts and shoes and old towels. And that's how things are made, folks. That's how things are made.
Yes, it is. Behind this backdrop, it is a mahogany desk and just beauty behind me. I'm just covering it up, right? I mean, that's totally not our story here.
Leather-bound books.
Leather-bound books. And that's not, you know. That's Josh's artwork that he hand selected in the background. That's totally not a hotel in the background.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. So real quick question. I got to ask this thing, Gabrielle. So at what stage do you guys do the fire coal walk in the purpose process?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Well, it's a virtual experience right now. So maybe we can like hook up with like FedEx or something to like ship out like little mini coal walks for people to experience. So I don't need the liability insurance on that, actually.
So for those millennials listening, that was a little jab at Tony Robbins. So I don't know if you, there you go.
Which doesn't look like a guy you want to make a jab to. I don't know. I feel like he can hold his own in a fight more than me, but you know.
He lives on an island in like Fiji or something like that. He's not here. It's fine.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Awesome. Well, hey, we can wrap up there and kind of go into the speed round. You know, really, really want people to check out your stuff because, you know, there's a lot of good content in there. There's a lot of, you know, I'm excited to read the book. You know, I have to admit, like when I, you know, watched the seven, you know, when I had the 7-to-1 principle revealed to me, I did, you know, spend probably about 20 minutes thinking about like, what have I done the last 7 months? And what am I going to do the next 7 months? Right. I mean, like it just triggers that in you. So I think that that's awesome. So going into the speed round real quick, what's the number one excuse you hear from people who, you know, their excuse as to why they're stuck?
Yeah. I literally, for some reason, thought you were going to ask, what's the number one excuse you give to people when you don't want to do something? And I was like, that's a great question, actually.
I mean,
That's question number one.
I'm putting that in the suggestion box of what you should ask people. I need ideas. Your question was the excuse people have when they're stuck.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that the big one is that they're afraid of failure. And I think that that is such a load of crap. I think that people are not afraid of failure. I think people realize that failure is part of the process. And they tell you that when they're saying, I'm afraid of failure. And yet they know that failure is necessary for any sort of growth. I think that they're afraid of what people are going to think of them. And so I think it's more popular to say failure, but in truth is, I think it's their ego. Yeah. And so they're afraid that people are going to think, oh my gosh, you know, she tried something and who does she think she is? Or, oh my gosh, I can't believe he thinks that someone's going to pay him for that. I think that that's what people are more afraid of. I think it's their ego versus, and the only way that you overcome ego is being obsessed with the people you have to help. That's literally the only way that you're going to overcome it, because you're always going to have those little doubt demons in your head saying you can't. But if you realize that you're not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for other people. There's that, that's the only conviction that you need.
Yeah. And to kind of throw back to one of our previous guests, you know, he said, if you're not getting negative feedback or judgment from others, your dreams are probably not big enough.
Yeah, right? Totally.
I mean, if you're just a cog in the wheel. You know, that's not good. Josh, you want to take the next one?
The difference though, I would say, sorry to interrupt on that, but now you have me thinking, I'm the worst at like quick questions because I'm like super thoughtful and I'm an author. So I'm like, actually, but crap.
The data suggests.
It doesn't matter. No. Okay. All right, Josh, go. I'm going to get on a tangent. Let's do this.
Called the speed round. So we're going, that's what we're going for.
I don't follow directions well. I should have warned you that.
Millennial.
Josh, 1, 2, 3, sip.
Yeah. So what are some other benefits or tertiary benefits you think of about helping people find their purpose? Not just like the one big main thing that they help. What are those other trickle down ones that kind of happen when people find their purpose?
It's, you know, great question. I think the biggest thing that's kind of surprising that we notice from folks is that the relationships get better. Because if you are in a position where you feel unfulfilled, you feel bitter, you feel insignificant, and you feel like you're wasting your life, that impacts how you parent, it impacts how you love, it impacts how you lead. And so we get notes from spouses all the time saying, thank you so much for helping my, you know, fill in the blank, find their purpose, because they're recognizing the benefit of when someone feels full, they then have something to give to other people. And so it's like the analogy of, you know, if someone's drowning, you don't want to jump in after them. It's how do you take care of yourself first? We call it the oxygen mask principle in the book. Take care of yourself first, so that way you can take care of other people.
Man, you got millennial expert. You're helping people become Nobel Peace Prize winners. You're, you know, the purpose fairy, and you're now a marriage counselor. So, I mean, there you go.
I don't know about that yet, but, you know, we're still married. So I feel like that's a pretty good success rate.
There you go.
5 years.
Yeah. Boom. There you go. Okay. So going off of business, I mean, when you're having a day where you like, you know, and to use a millennial term, where you just can't even, right? what is your go-to comfort food /beverage?
Sure. So kind of our – luckily, Brian and I have kind of the same taste, and it's pretty much tacos. Like I – and I think I even mentioned this last time, guys. Like Velvet taco. Yeah, so that happened. Actually, we had kind of a nasty day. It was just an expectations thing. We were supposed to go to Costa Rica on this leadership retreat with John Maxwell tomorrow, and it got canceled like 3 days before we were supposed to leave. And so Brian and I had been like bikini bod working out, like, okay, you know, we're not eating a carb this week. And clearly we didn't take it that seriously, because it was like 5 days before we were going. We felt like we should take care of ourselves. And literally they canceled it, and we immediately went to Velvet Taco and got a really good bottle of Cabernet. So we're big wine heads. We love wine a whole lot. So tacos and wine are pretty much my go-to.
I'm with you. People say that it's like, you know, you should have like some rich red meat or something with Cabernet. I'm all about the tacos and Cabernet. I'm fully on board with that. It's a great mix.
It's a great mix. Maybe that if Brian and I ever do a podcast, that's probably what it's called, Tacos and Cabernet.
Yes. Awesome. Okay, so last one, speed round question. You have a all expense paid trip, one destination. Where are you going? And what celebrity are you taking with you? And you said you could answer honestly because Brian said he's not going to listen to this podcast. So
what celebrity or just what person would I take with me?
Or hey, we're going to go celebrity. Let's go celebrity. And you can kind of do a
two. Well, and that's kind of because, I mean, I forgot to mention in the podcast that, I mean, you did get a celebrity endorsement for your book, kind of a, you know, not a small celebrity either. So, you know, for anyone listening, her book was endorsed by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who I've seen probably every movie of. But yes, if you were to bring any celebrity, dead or alive, who are you bringing?
Cool. Which is funny. Brian and I actually do this quiz all the time when we like whenever there's a presidential debate of who would you want to go on vacation with. It's one of our vetting processes of who we want to vote for is who do you want to go on vacation with, which I think is hilarious. So where am I going? I am a big like tropical hangout kind of adventure kind of person. So probably Costa Rica. That's one of my favorite places that I've ever been. And I definitely want to go back. I don't really know who counts as a celebrity, or not. So I don't know, I guess The Rock would be kind of fun. Now that you said it. And I think
I can't do that.
Probably like
trying.
I think it'd be super fun. I think most people are fun on vacation. Brian and I vacation very differently. He like turns over every 15 minutes because he can actually get tan. I wear a sun shirt and sit under an umbrella. So I prefer to not sit outside. So anyone who doesn't want to sit outside and wants to like, you know, go climb some trees or whatever, I think would be super fun on vacation.
You're kind of like my family are kind of on the Jim Gaffigan, you know, wearing the sun shirt in the swimming pool. You know, that's for us lighter skinned
people. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly my life. And Brian's like, you look like you're 7. He's like, going to bring me water wings next time we go on vacation to complete the look.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I have zero shame whatsoever. I was like, yeah. I don't care. I'm not, I have oftentimes when I'm about to go on vacation, I have nightmares of getting sunburned. So that's the stage of my life that I'm in, that I'm not having nightmares of like showing up naked or falling from a building. It's that my skin is damaged. So I'm not quite sure about what that says about me. I think it says that I'm in my 30s.
I am the one person in my family who doesn't tan, and it's really frustrating. Like everyone else, I mean, I've got siblings who like they stay inside in the winter and they come out dark, and I'm like two seconds in the sun and I'm red lobster, you know, like please someone aloe my back.
Yep. It's story of my life. What are you gonna do? That's what SPF is for. Like I have windows in my office and I put on sunscreen to sit in my office every day. So that's the status. I get sunburned driving to Trader Joe's. So I know where I am. I'm very pale and I have red hair. So it's just my lot in life that I shall be sunburned at some point. So
I love it.
Oh, awesome.
We'll end the episode there. Gabrielle, thank you so much for being on. Go ahead and talk about your book and the website and where they can get a hold of you and Brian one more time.
Sure. Yeah. So you can check out the book at purposefactorbook.com. You can pick up a copy on Audible or Amazon, Barnes & Noble. So you can get Kindle, Audible, hardback, which is pretty cool. So just check out the Purpose Factor kind of everywhere. And then to check us out, I mean, we're pretty active on social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, everything's at Gabrielle Boucher.
TikTok? Are you on TikTok?
I am not. I'm supposedly the worst millennial expert that I'm not on TikTok. But as I explained to everybody, I have a job. So I can't, and it's not to be on TikTok. So
every one of your videos, you're going to have to like give, you know, like things about purpose while doing a dance because that's all people do on TikTok. It's just.
That's true. Just create recorded dances. Yeah.
Purpose.
Awesome.
Macarena. Yes.
So. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming. You know, super excited to get this out. This is going to be, you know, this will be our January episode. And I hope that everyone listens to this. 2021, it's your year. Buy July. That is the first 7 months of 2021. You'll be 1% through your professional life, and hopefully people are making changes, right? So thank you again so much for coming on. Real quick, nothing we say can be taken as tax, legal, or financial advice. Not that we talked about those things, but it is a disclosure we have to put in there. So if you hear anything that sparked your interest, please talk to a professional, talk to Gabrielle, go seek tax, legal, financial help first before making decisions. So thank you everyone for listening, and we can't wait to do our next episode. So thank you again, Gabrielle.
Thanks.